Hello everyone, welcome to this episode of Paddock Pass, the podcast where we talk all things motorsport. I'm your host, Evie Spencer, an aspiring motorsport journalist from the UK, and you can follow me on TikTok, Instagram and YouTube at Evie Spencer Motorsport. Make sure to follow my socials and this podcast for lots of motorsport content. Hope you enjoy! So today I'm here with Andrew. Andrew, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, yeah, I'm Andrew Coley. I'm a television commentator and presenter. I've worked in motorsport for, I've done TV for about 14 years. Motorsport I've been involved with for about 25 years, starting as a fan, then a competitor, then an instructor, and now in television. So I'm a very lucky boy.
I love that you've done it all.
Completed it.
So everyone kind of has different responses to this question, but I feel like this will be interesting. So when and how did you find motorsport?
So probably, it's a tough one, isn't it, to remember when you first did. I would have been watching Formula One with my dad. So it would have been the era of like Nigel Mansell and Ayrton Senna and stuff. So late 80s, early 90s, I would say. Yeah, definitely. By then, definitely. When did Mansell win the championship? I think he won it in 92, if I remember correctly. So I would have been well into it by then. So yeah, late 80s, early 90s, just sitting watching TV, like most people, you know, cars come on and it either hooks you or it doesn't. And I liked it. My dad liked motor racing. He had, who's the dog? He had a Ford Capri, which was like a kind of a sporty car back then. And it had John Player Special stickers on the side, which was a cigarette company who sponsored a Formula One team. If you can imagine Ford now doing a road car with cigarette branding, it just wouldn't happen. But so, yeah, it was back in those days. And so that would be my first contact with the sport would be watching F1 on TV.
Yeah, I was the same getting into it. I've always been a fan of F1. My family have. So I feel like that's the way it is, isn't it, normally, Formula One? Because it's so iconic.
Yeah, the thing is, it's everywhere. You know, it's the one motorsport which does reach outside of its own little area. You know, I'm into lots of niche motorsports, rally and rallycross and all the different sort of things that come off. But everybody recognises F1 as the pinnacle. And because of that, it has the most coverage. You know, it's on the most TV channels. It's in the papers. It occasionally makes the real news, you know, when there's something really big and controversial that happens. So it's often the first thing that people get into. What's interesting is whether or not, you know, they end up loving that or whether they find the other motorsports as well. So lots of people only know F1, don't they? They don't know anything else. And then I think there's a bunch of people who kind of explore a bit more. So,
yeah. So talking about exploring different types of motorsport. So what do you commentate on now? Because I know you're a commentator. So what do you commentate on?
I am, yeah. So I've worked in television since 2009, so 14 years, but the first 4 years was very part-time as I was getting a foot in the door. And so I'd say I've been a full-time television commentator for about 10 years. So the stuff I do at the minute is Nitro Cross, which it was Nitro Rallycross, which is a rallycross series, which is in America. I do Extreme E, which is the electric off-road series, which is pretty well known now. It's the sister series to Formula E. That's on ITV here in the UK, so that's quite a big series. I do the Isle of Man TT races. I've only done that for the last 2 years, but I do the highlight shows for ITV. And I do a series over in Scandinavia called Rallycross Nordic, or it's actually known as Rally X now, which is brilliant. It's all kind of the world championship drivers. It's what they do, the world rallycross drivers. It's what they do when the season's not on. So they come and have fun with us and they're way more chilled out, but the racing is still epic. So those are kind of the four championships that I'm involved with. And I'm just, it's working as a freelancer. It's making sure all those dates slot in together. And I've been really lucky the last 2 years and hopefully this year as well, they'll all line up and I won't have to miss too many events. So yeah, it's a lot of different things.
I love that they're all so varied as well. Like I feel like some people do a lot of the same thing and it could get boring, but there are a lot of different things. And I reckon, you know, with the electric ones and then the non-electric stuff, and that's really cool.
Yeah, it really is. I enjoy the variety of it as well. The electric thing particularly is interesting. You know, lots of championships are going that way because they want the manufacturers involved. The manufacturers are doing electric cars because that's what the governments want, whether that's right or wrong. In the future, we'll see. But the fans don't always like electric. So it can be quite a hard sell, whereas the traditionalists still enjoy internal combustion engines. So it's nice for me to have a mixture of the two. And also the mixture of two wheels and four. You know, I never expected that I'd be working on the Isle of Man TT races. And so that's something really different for me. And I enjoy the variety. And from someone who's looking to work in motorsport, it's nice to have different jobs, because if all your eggs are in one basket and that disappears, suddenly you've got no work. So for me at the minute, it's nice to have a few different things going on.
Yeah, that is so cool. So can you tell me about your job and what it involves?
Yeah, sure. So obviously, I mean, the simplest explanation is I shout at cars that you can see what they're doing on the television, and I just tell you what they're doing, which I think is hilarious. You know, oh, the red car's overtaken the blue one. It's literally as simple as that on the face of it. And sometimes I think it's the world's stupidest job, because it's, you know, it's like a football commentator, you know, oh, look, he's kicked the ball in the goal. I know, I've seen. But it's the way you do it is the energy of the show. And I always try and explain to people, it's like a DJ playing a big club. You know, if you only play bangers, it's up here the whole time. Everyone gets like, it's too much, it's too much. And if you only play chill out music, it's not enough to get the crowd going. And in a race, no matter how long or short it is, you know, there's points which are bangers. And that's the start, it's the finish, it's some incredible overtaking or some tactics, it's a crash. And some of the race is not. It's chill out, which is where you're talking to the other commentator about what's going on. And I you know, as the lead commentator, which is what my role is, I started as the expert, which is the other role. As the lead commentator, you're kind of, you're telling everyone that everything is exciting. This is exciting. Look at this. And then you ask the expert who's with you, why is it exciting? Or why did that happen? And they tell you. So as the lead commentator, you're kind of steering the broadcast. And that's kind of the on-air side of it. What everybody doesn't see is the tons and tons of work that goes in around it. So, yeah, when we do Extreme and we're on air kind of for 2 hours in the afternoon, we've actually done a live stream in the morning, which is 2 hours long, which is qualifying. We then go away, do some prep work, you know, write all the notes, get all your results and your grids in. We then do the second qualifying session, which doesn't go out live on TV, but does go out live on site to all the guests who are there and all the teams. And then that all gets edited together to make the first hour of the 2 hour show in the afternoon, and the second hour is probably live. So again, we're live. So by, you know, if the event's, that's a strange championship because I'm in London for that one. So if the event is in Saudi Arabia, I'll my call time at the studio will be 5 a.m. We'll be on air at say from 6 till 8. We'll then be doing prep between 8 and 12, and then we'll be on air again between 12 and 2. And then we'll make the highlight show after we finish the live show. So, you know, a normal day in TV is sort of 10 to 12 hours long, and that's fine, but it's exhausting as well. I'm knackered by the time I finish any of my jobs, really. You know, rarely do you come home and go, that was easy, but it is often fun. You know, it's hard work, but it's fun as well. It's really rewarding.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. I think if you enjoy your job and it is rewarding, then it doesn't matter how long the hours are. It might make you tired, but it's worth it in the end.
I think that anything that's challenging is you know, is rewarding. If it's easy, if it's really easy, you kind of just churn it out. And I'm not dissing people who do that kind of work. There is a bit of me that dreams of going and mowing, say, a football pitch for a job or a golf course, and then going home and just putting the phone down and knowing that that's it. You know, whereas I work for American companies, for instance. So, you know, we finish at 5 p.m. here and they're just getting up at 9 a.m. in L.A. So just at the point you're thinking, the day's done. You know, the phone starts ringing and they want something over the other side. So I can totally get having a nice, normal job and having no stresses and not the freelancing of constantly looking at diaries and stuff. But I do also enjoy the pressure and the challenge of it. And with the pressure and the challenge, when it goes well, or even if it doesn't go well, if it's challenging and the whole event's hard work, when you finish the event, you feel like you've really had to earn those pounds or those dollars. And you're probably tired, but in a good way, you know, in a fulfilled, I've been challenged, we overcame it as a team. It was an event, whether it was a good or a bad one. An event happened, the TV show went out. That's what we often say. If it's been total carnage at the end, we'll go off air and there'll be all sorts of swearing and bad things said off air. And then we'll go, don't worry, it's fine. A TV show went out, an event happened, we're all good. And it might have been awful, but hopefully at home people don't realise quite how awful it is sometimes if it's all gone wrong.
So yeah. How did you get into what you do now?
So I was a rally driver. I competed up to national level here in the UK. My parents were school teachers, so I didn't have any contacts, you know, within motorsport. I loved cars. Went to a rally school when I was 19, did really well, bought a rally car, a Vauxhall Nova, which was just a terrible car. Everything was wrong with it. And then we didn't have any money, so I had to learn how to rebuild it all, which was a fun learning curve. I competed for a few years. Then I became a motorsport instructor, and I did that for about 10 years. And then the instructing kind of led to the TV work, although it wasn't quite that simple. I had to kick a few doors down to get there. You know, I found that whenever I was working at places like Brands Hatch, if ever they did any filming there, which quite often they do, you know, it would be, which instructor do we want to do the filming? And they'd ask me. And I kind of, you know, I never wanted to get into television. I didn't get to your age and think, oh, I want to be on the TV. I wish I had. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I just kind of, you know, meandered my way through it, did a few different things and ended up coming towards it. Really enjoyed the little bits that I did when I was working at Brands Hatch and all the rest of it, and thought, okay, I'm going to put some effort into chasing after this, which was what I did. And as I said earlier, sort of 2009 to 2013, I was really, you know, pushing to try and do it more and more. And then just in 2013, I got lucky. That was when things really started to unfold for me. And I say I would call it a full-time job sort of from then on. So yeah, my friends say I've never had a real job, which is terrible, isn't it? I quite like it, although I challenge them to come and spend, you know, 12 hours sitting in a portal cabin at some circuit in the freezing cold when it's all gone horribly wrong. You know, it is a job and it's hard. It's probably the hardest thing I've ever done, but it's also the best thing I've ever done. So yeah, very grateful for it.
One of my questions actually was, have you ever driven in any competitive racing? Sure. So my other kind of lead on question from that was, if you hadn't had raced, what would you like to race in?
If I hadn't in any motorsport, you mean, generally?
In any motorsport.
Yeah, so I mean, so just from a background point of view, I did tarmac rallying first of all for 2 or 3 years in my Vauxhall Nova. Then I got signed up by a team and I did the National Rally Championship, which was mostly in the forest, which was really daunting compared to what I'd done, like completely different surface. I went away for a few years, came back and did some more forest rallying. And then luckily, since I've been on TV, which sounds terrible, but is quite fun, it just occasionally people go, do you want to come and drive my rallycross car? And of course, I always say yes, which is great. So I've been lucky enough to do a bit of rallycross as well, which really helped with the commentating because, you know, if you do it, if you've done it and experienced it a little bit, you just have an idea of what people are going through. I can't tell you that I know exactly what Johan Kristoffersen's thinking on the start line as he goes to win his sixth World Rally Championship, you know. But having been there and worked with my family and tried to run a team, certainly when you're looking at people and you find they're fighting their way up, I've definitely got experience of that and it definitely helped with the job. But if I hadn't done any rallying, I'd have to go racing, wouldn't I? You know, I don't think I've got the cojones to do two wheels. I just think it's too easy to get hurt on two wheels. But I would love to. I've really, with rallycross, although I love about rallycross the fact it's mixed surface, I also really enjoy racing the other cars. And I'm not great at it because all my experience came from rallying where it's one car at a time, you know, against the clock. So I lack the racecraft that the top drivers have. So it's something I'd like to learn. I quite like challenging myself. So I'd probably go and do circuit racing, something like Renault Clio Cup, you know, something that where everyone's in the same car and you can really get your Caterham Sevens, maybe really get your head around, you know, around what it is that you're doing right or wrong on a track. You know, you can analyze circuit racing so much more easily than rallying. Rallying, it's a lot of onboard. You can't necessarily measure your breaking point from one corner to the next. Whereas with a circuit, you can look at that data and definitively say you're not breaking early, you know, late enough, or you're breaking too late. And I quite like that idea. So yeah, I would, a bit of circuit racing. Long answer.
I love it though. Yeah, I think looking from an outsider's point of view, if you hadn't watched either or you hadn't learned about it, they can look quite similar because they're both four wheels. I mean, yeah, obviously motorbiking and motocross and stuff like that is very different because it's a motorbike, but yeah, it looks, because it's four wheels and it's a car, it looks very similar. But I agree with you, I think there are very different aspects to it. So that's really cool. I think that's such a good answer. So tell me what an average race weekend looks like for you as a commentator.
Sure. So so Extreme E, I mentioned earlier on, that one's in London. So that's a bit different. And if I'm really honest, and Extreme E wouldn't like me saying it, but I'm going to say it anyway, I don't like being in London. I like being at the track. And I like being at the track because then you feel the emotion of the event much more. And that can be everything from the crowd and the noise through to things like the weather. You know, when you go outside, and it's, you know, if I said to you, it's really cold here today, you're not feeling it. Whereas if you were here and we went outside, you'd be like, it's really cold. And when you convey that to the viewers at home, I love to be at an event. So I'd be like, I saw Evie earlier. She looks really nervous. Yeah, we know she leads the championship, but it's cold. She doesn't like racing in the wet. You know, whatever it is, you just pick up these little things from being on site. So number one, I way prefer being on site. So if an average race weekend for me, let's do a nitro weekend. So I would go to Heathrow on a Thursday, fly to America. That means a very long day because obviously the flight is normally 10 hours. It's a couple of hours to the airport, a couple of hours there. And when you arrive, of course, you've gone back to a sort of mid-afternoon. So you're landing at midnight, 1 in the morning our time, and you're knackered. So the trick on the first night is to stay up late. You just have to stay up until 11 midnight if you possibly can, even with the jet lag, because you're only there. It's not like a holiday. You haven't got 3 days to sink into it. You're going to work in the morning. So I'm not going to lie, I normally go to the bar with everyone, we have a few drinks, and we stay up late the first night. And then the first day, let's say Friday, is filming. So as a general rule, we get an email the night before telling us where they want us and when. So they'll be like, it's a 9 a.m. call time, Andrew, Jared, Katie, these are your locations, these are your camera people. We have a WhatsApp group, with several WhatsApp groups for most productions, which tell you who you're meeting, where and when. And then from then on, it really is a bit of a moving feast that day because stuff happens. You know, where you want to do an interview with Travis Pastrana, but then he gets called away to go and do some local TV because they need, you know, some ticket sales. So that gets moved from 11 until 1. But at 1, you were meant to be doing this, so you move that. So Friday is a real juggling act. And if you have a good day, you could get it. You could knock it out in a few hours. There might be some voiceovers to do for the TV show where they start building the TV show on Friday. So they'll film practice. We film all the interviews. Yeah, we'll be cutting the previous races down into smaller edits. Not me, the editors. I'm nowhere near that talented. And we start making the show. So that's what Friday's about, really, is making all the little bits. And then also prep. So I'll go and check the commentary box. I'll check that all the tech is working. We do what's called a fact check, which I've never actually known what it stands for. I think it's a facilities check, not sure, but Google it. And that's where we test all our microphones. So we test we can hear each other. We test we can hear the reporter. We test we can hear the TV truck. So we have producers and directors in our ears the whole time asking, you know, telling us what's coming up and counting us down to advert breaks and things. So you test all those communications the day before. We'll check the camera positions, check that we've got everything we need. You maybe get some grids and documentation, depending on what time you're starting the following day. So like, extremely, if I'm on air at 6 a.m., everything is done the night before because I hate getting up early. So I will get up the latest I can possibly get up and come to the studio the latest possible. But if you're not on air till like 1 p.m., you'll have time the following morning, you know, to get things like grids. And then the race days is you know, lots of championships now are doubleheaders. So there'll be a race day Saturday and Sunday. And if not, then it's maybe qualifying Saturday and race on Sunday. So again, it depends how much of that coverage is live. Sometimes you're doing some stuff in the morning to get ready for it. And then when we go live, that's the really good bit. You know, that's when the pressure's really on. And when the titles play and you're in the commentary box and the titles come on, you can probably tell just from my smile, like it's wonderful. Just the energy you get from it, knowing the show starting right now. You know, there are people sitting at home watching this right now. And that was me. You know, I sat at home watching stuff and I still get a kick when I hear my voice on stuff on social media. I'm like, that's what you do for a job. That's crazy. Like how cool. So I love that. And when you go live, brilliant. Yeah, do the show, finish the first day. Don't go too mad in the bar that night because the second day you're going to be really tired by now. You're on your third day, you know, 6-7 hours out of your time zone. And we'll do the live TV again. That's the big day normally is the second day. And then finally, when that show's finished, we make the highlights. So you can, I mean, with Nitro, I normally go back in on the Monday morning because I don't fly home until Monday night normally from America. Most transatlantic flights come back on a Monday night. So it depends when it's due on the satellite, as in when the show's got to be played out. Sometimes the highlights have got to be finished by 9 p.m. So you might come off air at 4 and it's a real race to get that show finished for 9 p.m. to go out to the broadcasters. Other times it's not going out till Tuesday. So you can not chill, but yeah, we don't have to stress so much. We might do it the following morning. So that's like a whole race weekend. There's a bunch of stuff I do in between. So like this is my stats folder. So that's in between the events.
Oh wow.
So I'm making up stuff like this is win rates and pole rates and lists of wins, statistics. And then these ones are really useful, like where people have finished in what events. So there you go, you can have a good look at that.
Oh wow.
So gold is a win, bronze is a P3, and silver is a P2. So you have the events across the top, the drivers' names, and then the points. So then if you're commentating, I could quickly look down and say, Robin Larson coming up for his fourth win of the year. I can't remember that stuff. I just can't, especially when I've got folders for all my different championships in different colours. I don't remember. So lots of people have got brilliant memory, but I'm just really honest, I haven't got a great memory. So I make sure that I've got it in front of me in a folder. And that's kind of the stuff that you do in between events. So, you know, occasionally I'll update that on a race weekend, but not very often, to be honest. Normally it's just scribbled notes from day one to day two. So yeah, that's a weekend in the life. And then I fly home Tuesday morning and I'll sit and try and watch TV with my other half on Tuesday night, and I will fall asleep 100%. It's hard, but you get used to it. And I think the adrenaline carries you through as well. You know, it's exciting. It's a cool job. It's exciting. You're hanging around with, you know, I'm hanging around with some of the people that are my heroes, and that's brilliant. And you want to do it justice. So when you go on air, the rush that you get, I'm always nervous before I go on air, which I think is a good thing. But you get an energy from that. And I think that's also why you get so tired, because it's adrenaline on, adrenaline off, adrenaline on, adrenaline off. Just like being in the car, really. So it's pretty exhausting, but it's good fun.
So what was the most exciting race that you've commentated on and why?
Probably the finale of the 2019 FIA World Rallycross Championship. So we had two drivers, Andreas Backerud and Timmy Hansen, who had fought all year. And it was really interesting because we had, as a championship, I worked with World RX from 2013, when it was the European Championship, through to 2020, when I finished with them at the end of the year of COVID. And we'd had 4 years with manufacturing support. There were four manufacturers involved in the series: Audi, Ford, Peugeot, and I'm going to forget the last one like I always do. Doesn't matter. It was exciting. Yeah, we had Ken Block, Sebastian Loeb, Petter Solberg, you know, everybody was there. And then it all stopped, and all those manufacturers pulled out as they wanted to go electric racing. The series wasn't ready, and everyone was expecting 2019 to be not a great year, myself included, because we'd lost all these big teams. And what happened, in fact, was Volkswagen, they're the missing ones, the people who'd absolutely dominated it, disappeared. So when Volkswagen went and were miles in front, a little bit like Red Bull have been miles in front this year in F1, if you took them out, suddenly it would be incredibly exciting. And you could say the same about Mercedes-Benz in the previous years. You could say the same about Citroën in the World Rally Championship. At times there is a dominant team, and when you take them out, the fight is incredible. So this year we had this series where one of them would be ahead by enough that you think, oh, it's going to be over, they're going to win it. And then they'd have a shocking weekend and the other one would catch up. And about three events from the end, we all started saying within the series, wouldn't it be amazing if it went to South Africa, which was the last round? Well, yeah, probably won't they, but yeah, it would be amazing. And then we got to the next event and it was closer. We're like, oh my God, I think it might go to the last event. Wouldn't it be, oh, it probably won't. And then we're like, oh my God, it's going to go to South Africa. And we, like, by now you're thinking, right, one of them's going to blow their engine up in qualifying, you know, and that'd be it, it'd be finished. And they went through qualifying and they went through their four qualifying heats that you had in rallycross and the two semi-finals, and they ended up on the front row of the final in the very last race of the year, side by side, 1 point apart. And it was brilliant. Go look it up if you get the chance. 2019 South Africa World RX Final. I've never, ever felt so much pressure in my entire life as I did commentating that race, because it had gone down to the wire. And it lasted like five corners before they crashed into each other. But it's brilliant. You've got to go and see it. It went to the stewards' room. Like, they finished equal on points and Timmy Hansen won it on count back. And for me, either of them would have been a worthy champion, but it's a little bit like Max and Lewis in that the fans are they either love Andreas Backer or they love Timmy Hansen. There's no, yeah, there is no middle area. It's Verstappen and Hamilton. It's Senna and Prost. So that's probably the most exciting race I've ever commentated in terms of what was at stake. I've commentated tons of brilliant races, and that's one of my favourite things about rallycross, is that with the way the qualifying worked and still works in things like nitrocross, we have a bunch of races. So instead of just qualifying and a race like you have in F1, you know, we'll have qualifying races, then heat races, then semi-finals, then a last chance qualifier, then a final, and they're all races. Yeah, they all mean something. That you get a result from each, which leads you on to the next thing. So as a commentator, your favourite bits of the race are usually the start and the finish, and then some of the tactics in the middle. And the nice thing about rallycross, if you get a boring race, it only lasts 4 or 5 minutes, and then we just move on to the next one. So there's always something exciting. So it's a great sport to commentate, it really is.
That sounds so cool. Honestly, I would feel so on edge commentating that. I bet it's like, I bet you come home and you're shaking.
You are. And you want to get it right, because obviously, you know, at that particular point, everybody's watching, because it was the closest finish we ever had in that series. It's one of the closest finishes any FIA World Championship has had across all the different disciplines. And it still gets talked about now. You know, it's still controversial now. Was the decision right or not? You know, it was our Max and Lewis. So it was... Yeah, it was brilliant. But you want to do it justice. And I did feel the pressure. I felt terribly nervous. But I'm happy to say that when I watch it back, I'm pretty happy with it. You know, I think we did the best we could do with it at the time. And there's all sorts of things where we're not quite sure what the points are. And you can almost see us ticking over in our heads trying to figure out whether or not we've got it right. So yeah, it's great fun. Great fun.
I bet it was. It sounds so fun, honestly. So what is your biggest achievement so far? Sounds like there's a lot of good stuff.
Well, I suppose my biggest achievement in competition, I would still say, was I won my class in the National Rally Championship back in 2008. I've still got the trophy actually here. Hold on a second.
Let's get the trophy out. I love it.
It's only little. There it is. So that was me winning the MSA National Gravel Championship, first in class, only in the 1600 category, but we were... a family team with no money, you know, very few sponsors. We had an oil sponsor and a tyre sponsor, which we got after a great result at the first event. And I hadn't done that well in 2001 when I competed on gravel. I didn't feel I'd done very well. So it was a challenge to myself, you know, to go back into the woods, the forest, we call it in rally, in the forest, and try to be quick in the forest, because I was always quite quick on tarmac. And I'm happy to say that I felt like we did really well, you know. So we won the championship. We appeared in Motorsport News, the national motorsport paper at the time, on an article they called Shoestring Superheroes, which was people who'd, you know, done a championship on a budget of bugger all, and that included us. So, yeah, we camped sometimes to save money. Yeah, we camped at the back of a pub one time. It was like £8 a tent or whatever. It was... I can remember driving up to Kielder like two events in, and I was in the back of the van trying to find a mobile phone signal, calling the bank, asking them to move money from my savings to here. Yeah, I've been calling people going, can you pay that invoice, please, for instructing last week? I need to buy some tyres. It was proper tight for money. So I'm very proud of that. And I'm proud of the fact we did it as a family team. You know, my mum and dad are not mechanics at all. And I remember dad saying when we went to the championship finale, he was like, what if I can't fix the car or whatever? I said, dad, it doesn't matter. We haven't got any spares anyway. So I said, if the gearbox is broken, we're out. It doesn't matter. You know, I said, as long as I get the car back to service, we'll fuel it, wash it, you know, do the safety checks on it, check the fluids and so on, and we'll go back out and do it again. And we won. So that was brilliant. Very proud of that. And apart from that, I feel very grateful that I've got a career in a sport that I love. You know, I wanted to be a rally driver. Colin McRae was my hero, and I wanted to be a rally driver. I don't think I was quick enough or brave enough, but if I'd had the money when I was younger, maybe I would have been. You know, you need that practice when you're young and fearless, because it does go away as you get older. You become naturally more fearful of things. So the best time to learn is when you're young, and I wanted to be a driver, but I just feel incredibly grateful that I'm now knocking around with people who are my heroes, you know, like Petter Solberg and stuff like that. It's just Sebastian Loeb. It's brilliant to be involved. So I'm also very, very grateful for having a career in the sport, which is cool.
I love that. I think as well, because motorsport, we all kind of see it like from the outside looking in, everyone kind of sees it as it's basically working F1 or like you haven't really made it. But I feel like for a lot of people, and for me as well, everyone's like, do you want to work in F1? And I'm like, well, yeah, but any career in motorsport would be incredible. Do you know what I mean? And I feel like it's definitely really nice that you can appreciate that.
People ask me, they're like, you know, is the dream to make it to F1? And funny enough, I say no. And that doesn't mean I wouldn't do F1. I would. And I'm not going to lie, I don't do this for fun. You know, I do it for my job. So yeah, of course, if the money's right, see you later, I'll go and do F1. But I wouldn't do it just because it came up. You know, so if someone offered me F1, but I wasn't going to earn what I earn doing what I do now, I wouldn't do it, because it's my job. It's not to say it isn't the pinnacle. I get it. It is the pinnacle. And yes, if I did F1, more people would know who I was, and then you'd probably get more work outside it, blah, blah, blah. But there are a lot of people who work. It's like trying to become a commentator for the FA Cup, you know, on ITV. Everybody wants to be a football commentator. So if you like football, I'm not mad about it. If you like football, that's what they want to do. So you've got the enormous competition. And it wasn't, I didn't choose rallying and rallycross because there wasn't the competition, but it was niche. You know, I looked at it and thought, well, you know what, I'm a bit of an expert on rallying. It was probably a bit cheeky, really. I'd only won a class championship at national level, but the guy at Eurosport didn't know that, you know, and I didn't feel they had a rally expert. So I was like, you need a rally expert. And that's how I got a foot in the door. So if you want to work in F1, make F1 the target, by all means. But there are so many ways to F1. You know, there are so many ways. You could go Formula E now. Look at McLaren. You know, they've got teams in Extreme E, Formula E, IndyCar, F1. They've got the road car division. All of those things can lead to F1. And I think if you say to yourself, I want to work in F1, it's going to be quite a tough route. Whereas if you go, what's another way to F1, I think you might find you'll have a brilliant career anyway. And if you end up in F1, then great. If you don't, so what, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that's very important to like keep, because yes, F1 could be the dream, but at the same time, there are lots of other things that you'd be very lucky to get in motorsport.
Yeah.
So I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
So have you got any plans for the near future? So what are your plans for this season and stuff?
So I'm at that point where we do contracts, which is always a nerve-wracking time as a freelancer. You know, you'd like to hope that you've done a good enough job that people are going to want you back. And I'm happy to say that I've already signed a contract with the Isle of Man TT. So that's good. Extreme E, I haven't signed a contract, but they've asked me what hotels I want for round one. So I assume they want me back. we'll deal with the contract later. Pro Rallycross, Nitro Cross, I'm also in contract negotiations with at the minute. You know, you normally do a one-year deal and then you just look at it towards the end of the year. But what's difficult as a freelancer is if something doesn't come off, you don't have much time to change direction. You know, so if somebody said to me now, we're not going to use you this year, it's almost too late to be doing something else. If you're looking at next year, you need to be looking at it back in September. Yeah, it's when you need to start making noises about where you want to be going in January, February, March. So the same series I've done the last few years, Nitro Cross, Rally X, Extreme E, and the Isle of Man TT. And then I'll probably do some corporate work as well. So I go and host hospitality suites sometimes. So this last year, I went to the Las Vegas Grand Prix and looked after some guests there. I was at Formula E in Rome and in Mexico, again, looking after guests in hospitality. And that's quite a nice sideline for what I do. It's much less stressful than television, but it's still quite well paid. And it's just nice. You know, it's nice to go and hang out with people and bring the race to life for them. A lot of the people who go to these events as guests, you know, are working in a business that sponsors a team and they come along and they don't know anything about it. So your job is to try and make it come to life for them at whatever level they want. You know, not everybody wants to know about tire compounds. You know, some people want to know why has he done that? You know, literally they don't know anything. And then you get other people who are really into it and they want to go right into the nitty gritty. So it's nice to have some different work to TV. So I'll try and maintain that as well.
I think that's really nice because, again, with the variety thing, I just think it gives you a lot of variety, but all in the same sport, which is really cool because then you can have a lot of different experience in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's the con. I would say I think you're already on LinkedIn, Evie, because that's how we found each other. But get on LinkedIn and make sure that you're hitting up the contacts. You know, go through my contact list later and have a look at who you want to be in touch with and get in touch with them. I've come on here because you asked me to come on here. That's fine. And I think you people, particularly when you're young, you can be a bit nervous about approaching people. And it's fine. You know, if they don't want to do it, they either won't reply to your email or they'll say no. So what? Nothing ventured, nothing gained. You know, try. Go for it. Have a go. Ask someone if you can go along and watch what they do on a weekend and see if you can go and do some work experience. There is a chance they're going to say yes. And that's a door open. And then when you end up there, you meet 15 more people. You know, get some business cards. It sounds so old school, but when people are in a rush and you just go, take my card, I'll speak to you later. It's better if you can put the details in the phone. It's better if you can get their contact details because then you can send them an email when they're in the office next week. But, you know, old-fashioned business cards go a long way when people are really busy. Go, let me give you a card. Give me a shout next week. They might. They might not. They might throw your card in the bin. So what? You've got to try. Keep trying for those contacts. It's really important. The network is really important.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that this year I've definitely worked on a lot personally.
Yeah.
And I think, like, my LinkedIn list now, from the start of the year, like, it was nothing at all. It was so funny. I had, like, 3 contacts, and they were my mum, my dad. So I think... Yeah. And it is important as well.
100%. I call it professional Facebook. I don't post on it much, although I've tried a little bit more posting. It's interesting when you post stuff, you know, I'll just put up a podcast that I've done or something. You know, I've done a few of those recently. We're doing a series with Nitro Cross, and the second one I did was with Travis Pastrana, which is ridiculous. You know, Travis Pastrana, but he's brilliant. I don't know him anyway from the racing, and he's such a lovely guy. And so I put it on my LinkedIn, and it gets quite a lot of traction, actually. Yeah, and just the same way you're looking for, maybe looking for likes in the old days on Facebook or Instagram, you know, of retweets on Twitter, as it was. LinkedIn is a good tool for that as well. And it just lets people go, ah, okay, I see what they're doing. They've progressed. They've moved on from that to this. So it's a very useful tool, and one that I always tell people they need to get involved with. So good for you.
Yeah, my mum works in marketing, so LinkedIn is like, that was like, she was the first person. She was like, Eves, you need a LinkedIn profile, you need to sort this out. So she's sorted me out completely. So I'm lucky to have obviously a mum and then a dad who works in marketing as well. So it's like, brilliant. I am sorted.
What do you want to do? Do you want to do marketing? Have you thought about what you fancy doing in motorsport?
Any motorsport media, presenting, yeah, marketing, hospitality stuff, any of that would be so cool.
The hospitality stuff's not a bad way to start. You know, I did quite a few things with SEAT's British Touring Car team, and Darren Turner's guest. Darren is a famous GT driver. He's had a 10-year career with Aston Martin, and he did some touring cars as well. I used to look after his guests, and it's just, you realise about talking to a room full of people, you know, it can be quite nerve-wracking. And then the driver comes in, you do a Q&A with them in front of the guests. All those little things all help build your confidence up. I used to do a lot of that when I worked as an instructor at Mercedes-Benz World. I'd do a commentary each day on the drifting display that they did. And then we'd have the drivers come over, and we had Lewis Hamilton come down one day, and I ended up hosting the thing with Lewis on stage for an hour with 3,000 people. Yeah, my first big event, and there were 3,000 people in front of the stage. You're like, of course you're nervous, but you've got to do it sometime. And so we jumped in and we did it. You know, 2 years later, we had an event with 15,000 people at it when Braun won the Formula One World Championship. And they said, oh, we've got another presenter in to help you. It's Steve Ryder, who's like a really famous presenter off ITV. And I'm like, God, I'm working with Steve Ryder. It's mad. So, yeah, you just got to, the little hospitality gigs can lead to bigger things. So you just got to get after it. I think get as much. This is brilliant. What you're doing here is brilliant. And I think you've got to get after more experiences. You know, if you can go and do some media work at your local track, you know, Brands Hatch, wherever it might be, see if you can go and volunteer at an event and just follow the press officer and see what they do, or help the press officer and just get an idea of what their role is. And you'll pick up more and more things. And then before you know it, they go, the press officer's ill this weekend, can you come and do it? There's 200 quid in it, whatever it is. And that's the foot in the door. That's the foot in the door. Experience, really important.
Yeah. And I did Williams work experience last year.
Oh, brilliant.
Which is really cool. That is really cool. And I just see things around my room now. Like I've got literally next to me. Hold on, let me grab it.
Yeah, I want to see it.
It's, oh my gosh, right, there we go. Hold on. It's just the lanyard, right?
Yeah.
It's on the side. And it's like the Williams logo and then my name next to
that
it.
That is so cool.
And I'm like, that is awesome. But it was so cool. And you meet so many new people. Like, so I met a driver there, James Sherrington, and he came on my podcast.
Yeah.
And I got him on my podcast, but I never would have met him. So really like changing subject here, but who are your motorsport heroes? I know you've mentioned a couple of people, but give me like the top few.
So the number one and two would be Colin McRae and Richard Burns, just because they were Richard was British, Colin was Scottish. They both won the World Rally Championship and they were my heroes. Yeah, they were the people that I wanted to emulate. I wanted to be them. So they're definitely top of the list. They're the people that I would credit with taking me from just being a fan, just being, you know, going and watching events and then thinking, oh, I really want to do this so badly and making that effort to go and do it. You know, you do have to put that effort in and they inspired me to do that. So they definitely from their time. And then now it's so difficult now because now I'm so lucky to work with some of these people. It's amazing. You know, it really is. I mean, I suppose Valentino Rossi, massive Valentino Rossi fan, just because MotoGP legend. So he'd have to be right up there. Who else am I a big fan of? So the trouble is now I work with a lot of them, which isn't that, and that's really cool, isn't it? So I suppose, yeah, I suppose the people that really inspired me, Colin McRae, Richard Burns, and then I just, Rossi, I was such a huge fan of Rossi. I was a Mansell fan and a Damon Hill fan. You know, they were the British drivers coming up when I was, and I'm a Lewis fan now. You know, I am a Lewis fan. I get it. I know you're either Max or Lewis, whatever. I can respect both. They're insane talent behind the wheel. You know, they are both incredible drivers. They really are. I'd love it if they'd signed for the same team. I know there were rumours, weren't there? Yeah. That Lewis was going to sign for Red Bull, which was crazy, really, and he squashed them straight away. But I would have loved to have seen those two in the same team. But I think it would, you know, that's a Senna and Prost situation, like when they were in McLaren together. You know, you're looking at, you can self-destruct a team if you're not careful. So I'm a big Lewis fan. And then in terms of my sport at the minute, obviously the people who excel at it always really impress me. The likes of Johan Kristoffersen, Mattias Ekström, you know, the Hansen brothers, Andreas Backerud, Travis Pastrana, you know, Fraser McConnell. They're all the guys who are right at the top of what I do now. It's been lovely for me actually to see their careers progress because I've been involved with rallycross now for a decade. You know, some of these, Fraser McConnell wasn't even competing in rallycross when I'd been commentating it 5 years before he started, and now he's right at the top of the sport. You know, Johan Kristoffersen came and made his debut in the World Championship in Belgium, I think it was. That's the first time I remember him being in the press conference. Anyway, it probably means he was on the podium. He's won the title 6 times. I messaged him earlier today about something I'd seen on Instagram that I knew he'd like. So, you know, I'm always inspired by people who are the very best of the best. And yeah, that's the list, I suppose, that for me in rallycross now. There'll be people I've missed there, and they'll be horribly offended if they see this. But they'll know that I'm thinking of them as well. You know, it's great working with people who are at the top of their game. I think that's one of my favourite things about working in the highest point of motorsport. You know, and again, you know, F1, the World Rallycross Championship, WRC, whichever one of those you're working in, those people are the best in that sport. They're best engineers. They're the best drivers. They're the best co-drivers. And in television, I like to think that when you're working at that level, you get to work with some of the best people. And so everybody's working really hard in the same direction. You'll know from your experience at Williams, yeah, it's one focus on one goal for everyone. Yeah, make the best racing car, win the race. For us, it's make the best TV show. And I love working with people who are trying to excel at what they do. And that I find that really inspiring. And I think it's, you know, when you work in those circles, sometimes it can be quite hard adjusting to normality. Yeah, you know, I'm like, well, why is Tesco's the queue so long? You know, this isn't, we change four wheels in 2 seconds and you get frustrated. Real life isn't as dialed as motorsport is at the highest level. So real life can be a bit frustrating sometimes when you're used to things happening in a very perfect way. But that's the pinnacle of motorsport, you know, is perfect. So it's good to be involved with. It's inspiring.
Yeah, I think as well, it's always about the people you're surrounded with. As much as it's like, I love what I do and I love what I'm doing, it's also, you have to love the people you work with. And I think it's important that you're inspired by them and you work well with them. So, and I think that's really important, especially in motorsport, because it's like one second it's this and then it flips. Like it's so like stop and start and stop and change and turn. And it's literally madness. So I think that is really important. And I like that a lot. So this is my last question. I ask everybody this question. So this is not just F1, which I feel like over the times I've kind of clicked that everyone probably thinks this is F1, but any paddock pass anywhere in the world, if you could go and get a paddock pass to any race, where would you go?
Wow. That's a tough question, isn't it? And I've been so lucky to have some pretty epic paddock passes over the years. You know, Rally Monte Carlo, you know, Formula One Grand Prix. Yeah, I mean, the World Rallycross Championship. You know what I mean? So I guess I'd have to go somewhere I haven't been. And so I would probably go for, what would I go for?
It can be Formula One. I am just letting you
know. No, no.
It doesn't have to be.
Nah, lucky I've had one, isn't it? You know, not completing it, but, you know, I've been involved, which is lovely. I'd probably go either for the 24 Hours of Le Mans, just because I've never actually been. I've never been to Le Mans, and everybody tells me that's sacrilege and I should go. And you know what? Funnily enough, sports cars hasn't really traditionally been my thing. You know, the races are very long, and I deal in races that are 4 minutes. You know, they deal in races that are 24 hours. But I love it. It's such an iconic event. I think to have the access at that event to go everywhere would be incredible. If it wasn't that, then I'd probably go Indy 500 or the Monaco Grand Prix. And the Monaco Grand Prix is a terrible race. But you might bump into Arnold Schwarzenegger, which would be fun, wouldn't it? Or so probably the Indy 500 or 24 Hours of Le Mans, I think. Just because, the Indy, it's like the Monaco Grand Prix, isn't it? When you look at iconic events, it's Rally Monte Carlo, it's the Monaco Grand Prix, it's the Indy 500, it's Rally Finland, it's the 24 Hours of Le Mans. If you had a bucket list and you wanted to tick them off, outside of my sport of rallycross, if it was rallycross, there's all the events are great, obviously. Isle of Man TT, that's one that people have got to go and see. Again, I've been so lucky to be involved with that. That would have been very high on the list had it not been for the fact that I've been there. So yeah, there you go. Indy 500 or Le Mans.
That is so cool.
Which one? What would you do?
Well, personally, I've not heard anyone say the Indy 500 on the podcast before. So that is really cool. I think I've had 24 Hours of Le Mans.
Yeah.
Once or twice. Yeah. I've always had F1 stuff as well. But no, Indy 500 is one I've not heard before.
Yeah, it'd be wicked.
But actually, thinking about it, that would be really cool. I really like IndyCar and stuff. Yeah, I think that's a good one, actually. That's an interesting one.
The famous venue, America, the fighter jets coming over, Stars and Stripes, it would be, they know how to put on a show in America. They can teach, lots of people don't, people were moaning about the Grand Prix in Vegas. Oh, it's too much show and all this other stuff. It's brilliant, It's different. We're a little bit more reserved over here. I get that, but it doesn't mean that it's wrong.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I like to see it. I think we showed the world in 2012 at the Olympics, a little bit too long ago for you, I know, but I'm sure you can find a DVD. Oh, sorry, it'll be on YouTube now, won't it? But the opening ceremony was epic. We moved the bar for the opening ceremony by a very, very long way. Like, nobody had done it the way we did it, and it was classy, too. It wasn't just brash. It was really classy. It was all about Britain and the history of the Olympics and the history of the UK generally. It was great. And you've got to let people try it. Okay, maybe some of the stuff they do in Vegas and Miami is a bit oof to us, but we're British, they're American. Different audiences, different reach. So yeah, Indy 500, there we go. Sold.
Yeah, and I totally agree with what you say about the Americans go like a bit more wild, but it's still really good. But the Circuit of the Americas, I always love that Grand Prix because I just think it's one of them Grand Prix. They all turn up in cowboy hats. When Daniel Ricciardo a couple of years back came in on a horse in the middle of the paddock, and it's so good.
Yeah,
and I think they all get involved. Yes, you need to go there.
It's a great city. Austin is about a half hour drive away. We've had rallycross there. So we had rallycross there a couple of times, the World Championship and America's rallycross. So I've been to Austin, I think, three times, but it's a great place. It's a fantastic city and it's a great venue. So yeah, you've got to be open to people doing stuff differently, and the Americans definitely do it differently. But that doesn't mean it's wrong. So yeah, good times.
I love that. And yeah, I totally agree. So thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Paddock Pass podcast with me, Evie Spencer. Make sure to follow this podcast for more episodes and head over to my socials for more motorsport content.